Hello, I'm Representative Connie Bernardi, and welcome to the Higher Education Finance and Policy Committee in the Minnesota House of Representatives. Pursuant to House Rule 10.01, I call the remote hearing of the Higher Education Finance and Policy Committee to order. The committee legislative assistant will take the roll.
Chair Bernardi.
Present.
Bernardi, present. Vice Chair Christensen.
Present.
Christensen, present. Representative O'Neill.
Present.
O'Neill, present. Representative Albright.
Present.
Albright, present. Representative Daniels. Representative Erickson.
Present.
Erickson, present. Representative Hansen.
Hansen, present.
Hansen, present. Representative Heintzman.
Heintzman, present.
Heintzman, present. Representative Howard. Representative Keeler.
Present.
Keeler, present. Representative Cleavorn.
Present.
Cleavorn, present. Representative Kosnick. Representative Kreisha. Representative Mason. Representative Meckland.
Meckland, present.
Meckland, present. Representative Noor.
Present.
Noor, present. Representative Sandell.
Present.
Sandell, present. Representative Sandsted.
Sandsted, present.
Sandsted, present. Representative Thompson. Representative Daniels. Representative Howard. Representative Kosnick. Representative Kreisha. Representative Mason. And Representative Thompson. And a quorum is present, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much. Now may I have a motion to approve the minutes for March 10th, 2021.
So moved, Madam Chair.
Representative Christensen moves approval of the minutes for March 10th, 2021. Any discussion? Hearing none, those in favor say aye.
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 Those opposed, the motion prevails and the minutes for March 10th, 2021 are approved. Before we begin our hearing today, I want to just reflect and thank all of our committee members who provided a leadership role in selecting our Board of Regents. And last night, for the people tuning in, the Board of Regents for the University of Minnesota were elected in the 1st, 4th, 6th, and 7th Congressional District. And Dr. Johnson in the 1st, James Farnsworth in the 4th, Jody Verhalen in the 6th, and Doug Hepsch in the 7th. And I want to congratulate all of them and thank all of you for, as I said, the role that you played in helping select the University of Minnesota Regents. Thank you. Now we have two bills up today, and the first one we'll take up is House File 1041 from Representative Keeler, followed by House File 1708 by Representative Wolgamott. We will give each author a chance to introduce their bill, followed by additional testimony, and they will have, and then we will leave time for member discussion. So Representative Keeler, is House File 1041. The bill is before our committee, and would you like to move the bill?
Yes, Madam Chair.
Representative Keeler moves House File 1041 to be laid over for possible inclusion. Representative Keeler, I believe you have a number of testifiers today, and we look forward to hearing from them. The first one is Paul Spies, Coalition of Inc. to Increase Teacher of Color and American Indian Teachers in Minnesota. So, but first of all, before we move into that, would you like to say anything about your bill before we move into the testifiers?
I would, Madam Chair. Thank you. And thank you, members, for the opportunity to talk about House File 1041. This is an area that we've all been talking about, but it's a higher ed version to increase our teachers of color. I'll just share a quick story. As I've said in many places, even when we did our introductions here, is as an Indigenous woman, I have gone through K-12, I have my associates, my bachelor's, and my master's, and I've never had a teacher who looks like me. We talk about the importance of representation, and I'm not alone in understanding the priority for that. When I was in my master's program, I did my practicum around understanding the barriers for our students, minus the academic piece. And the number one thing that rose to the top was the fact that teachers aren't looking like our students and our community members, and that's really important. When you don't see somebody who looks like you at the front of a classroom, it subliminally tells you that you don't belong there. I mean, we need more teachers of diverse backgrounds. It's not just a benefit for students who look like me or other BIPOC students. It's a benefit for all students. So we do have a lot of testifiers today. What this bill does is it creates three different things. It creates a scholarship for students who are going into teaching. It creates a student teaching stipend, because we all know when students are actually doing their work in the classroom, there's a financial barrier there. And then it also provides a student a teacher loan forgiveness plan, which can be used for teachers who got their license in Minnesota or potentially even some recruitment opportunities. So I'm not going to speak much more on it. Like we said, we have a lot of testifiers here, so we will pass it over to them. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Keeler. We'll move into our first testifier, Paul Spies, with the Coalition to Increase Teachers of Color and American Indian Teachers in Minnesota. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Spies.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. My name is Paul Spies with the Coalition to Increase Teachers of Color, American Indian Teachers in Minnesota. My purpose in talking with you is to run through the bill in a little bit more detail. I'm going to share my screen right now. Can you verify that you can see the Increased Teacher of Color Act on your screen? Thank you.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So the Increased Teacher of Color Act that you're hearing is the higher ed bill, obviously, and we also have an E-12 bill that's been heard in the Ed Policy Committee and Ed Finance Committee, House File 217. Together, these two pieces of legislation are making up the Increased Teacher of Color Act of 2021, and their intention is to increase the percentage of teachers of color, American Indian teachers in Minnesota, not just the number, but the actual percentage we've been stuck at for more than a decade. And there's three main component parts to make that happen. One is to attract and prepare more teachers of color, or we say TOCAIT. Another is to increase program completion, and that's a big part of what the bill you're hearing today is going to do. A third is to increase TOCAIT retention. And all of these things are intended to make good on the promise that was made in 2016 in the omnibus bill, when several statutes were amended saying that all students should have equitable access to effective and diverse teachers who reflect their diversity in schools. So as Representative Keeler said, there's three main aspects to this bill. One is the Aspiring Minnesota Educators of Color Scholarship Program. This would be a new program, but it's not our first time proposing this. We proposed it in 2017 and in 2019. This would be last dollars, with scholarships up to $10,000 per year and up to $25,000 total once a student is admitted to a teacher prep program and before student teaching. Section 2 focuses on student teacher grants. And we've learned a lot over the last 4 years with that grant program being administered. One of the things we've learned is that the grants, based on how licensure shortage has been defined, those grants are going to student teachers who are not in the most severe licensure shortage areas, in the most severe economic development regions needing student teachers and teachers. We unfortunately have had a lot of those student teacher grants because of the way that shortage area has been defined, go to elementary teachers in the Twin Cities who are not from underrepresented groups. So this bill proposes to address that by making sure we identify the most severe licensure shortage areas by economic development region. It also prioritizes most of the appropriations for student teachers of color and student teachers who are from American Indian groups as the largest and most severe type of shortage area in the state. And finally, it improves and provides more clarity for administration and accountability reporting. The third section is focused on the teacher shortage loan forgiveness program that's also been around for several years. And it increases the amount per year that a teacher could get from $1,000 to $2,000 per year, and from the maximum of 5 years currently in statute to a maximum of 10 years. This would focus loan repayment assistance again to the teachers in the most severe licensure shortage areas by economic development region, and that hasn't been the case over the last several years, as well as those who are part of underrepresented racial or ethnic groups, having the percentage of those teachers equal the percentage of students of color, American Indian students in the state, just like the student teacher grant program has been run for the last 4 years since 2017. And finally, that also improves and provides more clarity in administration and reporting. So the financial request for the committee is for the aspiring educator of color scholarships. We're proposing to support 1,000 TOCA 8 candidates in fiscal 22 and 1,600 in fiscal 23. With these proposed amounts of 10 million in the first fiscal year and 16 million in the second. Again, our goal is to increase the percentage of teachers of color in the state. The second, in terms of student teacher grants, the current biennium has 1.25 million per fiscal year, and we're proposing an increase to 2 million in the next fiscal year and fiscal 23, 3 million. And then teacher shortage loan forgiveness, the base appropriation is $200,000 per fiscal year. We're proposing that be $2 million per fiscal year going forward. We just note that the request is only 1% of the total higher ed projected budget spending. So we think this is a reasonable thing given the priority that many across both parties have said to increase the percentage of teachers of color. And I will stop there and take questions later and let us go to the other testifiers.
Thank you, Mr. Spies. We are going to now move on to Priscilla Mayoa. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Representative Bernardi, I don't believe I am testifying on this bill.
Okay, well, thank you for being on hand. We appreciate that. And she is with LEAD Minnesota. She's a president. We have with us Gabe Hafman. Will you be testifying today?
Madam Chair, yes, I will. But I, like Priscilla, am for the next bill.
Okay. Okay, well, we will get back to the correct piece of paper here. And we will go to Dylan Gage. Dylan, thank you for your patience and welcome to the committee. Please state your name and the council you're with.
Dylan Gage, Cultural Resource Specialist, Minnesota Indian Affairs Council. Thank you, Chair Bernardi and members. Like I mentioned, my name is Dylan Gage and I'm representing the Minnesota Indian Affairs Council today. My colleagues and I are here today to provide our united message on behalf of the three state ethnic councils and the Indian Affairs Council, in strong support of House File 1041, which is part of the comprehensive package of the 2021 Increased Teachers of Color Act. This effort has been the top joint educational priority for our councils since 2017. The bill before the committee seeks to address the state's chronic shortage of teachers of color and American Indian teachers, and has been built on consensus and feedback from hundreds of community and organizational stakeholders. The targeted investments and policy changes included in House 1041 are key to assisting a comprehensive and statewide approach to addressing Minnesota's persistent achievement and opportunity gaps. Thank you.
Thank you. And next is Andy Morris. Please state your name and a counsel for the record. And Theo Rose is on deck then.
Thank you, Madam. Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Andy Morris, and I serve as the Public Affairs and Legislative Liaison at the Council on Asian Pacific Minnesotans. In 2016, adopted state law amended several statutes to ensure all students have, quote, improved and equitable access to effective and diverse teachers. Improved equitable access to diverse teachers would reflect the diversity of students in their schools with the aim of improving outcomes. However, providing all students with equitable access to teachers of color and indigenous teachers is a goal that our state has yet to accomplish as we seek to narrow our persistent opportunity and achievement gaps for our constituent communities. As you know, these gaps extend into higher education, and the severe shortage of diverse E-12 teachers limits our collective ability to reach the state's official higher education attainment goals because, at present, only 25% of all students enrolled in higher education institutions come from our communities. Thank you.
Madam Chair, I think you're on mute.
Thank you. Welcome to the committee, Theo Rose. Please state your name and counsel for the record.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Theodore Rose, and I am the Legislative and Policy Director at the Council for Minnesotans of African Heritage. The existing research is clear and consistent. All students, including students of color and American Indian students, benefit from diverse teachers. A recent report by the Office of the Legislative Auditor identified financial assistance for completing licensure programs as a critical need for teachers of color candidates and also for American Indian teacher candidates. House File 1041 addresses this problem by establishing the Aspiring Teachers of Color Scholarship Program and also by providing additional investments for the Student Teacher Grant Program and the Teacher Shortage Loan Forgiveness Program. These measures will help our state make strides in overcoming structural barriers that prevent potential candidates in our communities from entering the profession. Moreover, the proposed investments represent only 1% of all higher education spending. Thank you.
Thank you. Next is Adrian Magana. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Madam Chair, my name is Adrian Magana, and I'm the Legislative and Policy Director at the Minnesota Council on Latino Affairs. We thank you for your leadership in hearing this bill, which is pressing and vital for our communities. We also thank Representative Keeler for her leadership in this comprehensive and innovative proposal that continues the hard work of Representatives Knorr and Nornes, who carried similar and bipartisan legislation in the past. In conclusion, our communities are urgently calling for this legislation. It advances educational excellence, workforce productivity, and responds to the dynamic needs of our students. We ask that you fully support House File 1041 in your omnibus bill and negotiations with the Senate, where its companion is led by Senator Abler and enjoys bipartisan support. Thank you for doing what's right for all Minnesotans.
Thank you, Mr. Magana. Next with us is Selma Abdi. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Chair Bernardi and members of the committee. Can you guys see me well? Awesome.
Yep.
For those of you guys who don't know me, my name is Salma Abdi, and I'm a part of the Minnesota Youth Council, the only legislatively mandated youth group in the entire country, and we have endorsed HF 1041 and all the bills that the coalition has introduced. Additionally, I'm a current junior in high school, which means applying to colleges this year, which I'm not looking forward to for a variety of reasons, but I'm excited. So as I compile a list of colleges I'll be applying to, I have to keep in mind a lot of things that will go into my decision, like location, size, academics, and above all, the price. As you all know, college is expensive, and having a brother who's currently a senior and looking at all these financial aid and scholarship packages, it's become clear how expensive it is. Tuition is expensive, including in-state tuition. And that's why it's important to pass this bill. because we need to increase the number of teachers of color we have in Minnesota, because as a student of color, I want to see a teaching staff that is representative of the diverse student body. So in order for that to be accomplished in our state, we need to be we need to have teaching be financially accessible for all students who are hoping to enter the teaching industry. An example of why that is so essential is how teaching is viewed by K-12 students. See, when I was younger, anytime teachers asked us about our future careers, they would say, "How come you guys don't want to become teachers?" And we'd always respond is because we don't want to make that much money and still have student loans. Teachers pay thousands of dollars in student loans. For example, the average amount of loans teachers have in America is $37,000, which is $1,000 less than the average salary of a teacher, which is $38,000. See, it is incomprehensible for us to look at both of these numbers and assume people will still join the teaching industry, especially considering the national amount of student loans is $1.7 trillion. So I urge you guys to pass this and diversify the teaching staff of America and Minnesota specifically for a better future. Thank you.
Thank you. Tavara Price, welcome to the committee. Please state your name.
Thank you, Tavara Price. Hello, Madam Chair and members. My name is Tavara Price from the University of St. Thomas, and I am very thankful to have received a student teacher grant that aided me in paying tuition and to financially support my household as I pursue my dream of becoming a special education teacher. It was important that I received this grant because there is a need for BIPOC educators in the classroom. As a Black woman who was fortunate to have Black and Brown teachers during my elementary years, I can tell you it makes a world of a difference. Not only is representation important, but it is also important that our youth see themselves as future educators and leaders inside and outside of the classroom. Having teachers that lived and worked in my community made me feel empowered and connected to them. Not only did they dedicate the time to get to know me as a learner, but also as an individual and a community member. Unfortunately, this was not my experience as a student in the Twin Cities, where the majority of my teachers were white and lived outside of the cities. I recall feeling disconnected and misunderstood. This is not to say that there are not great teachers from all racial groups, but my experiences were very limited. Due to my educational occurrences, I am committed to providing my scholars with an experience that is equitable and that will aid them in becoming lifelong learners and leaders. The negative stereotypes and stigma of our urban youth minimizes their opportunities to apply and reach their highest potential. I believe that all scholars are capable of attaining their goals when they have the appropriate resources and educators who believe in their ability to achieve. Our scholars are our futures. Our scholar are us. Therefore, you should increase the grant, the program, and other scholarship opportunities for up-and-coming leaders that want to pursue service as an educator. Thank you.
Thank you. Next up is Lucky Omar. No, excuse me. We're going to go to Jabari Brown.
Thank you for having me. My name is Jabari Brown. I am currently a graduate student at the University of St. Thomas. And I would like to say thank you first and foremost for having me here. And I want this bill to pass. I feel like as a person of color, an African-American male in special education, I feel like this grant has helped me pursue my dreams of becoming a special ed teacher. I've been trying to get my teaching license for about 10 years now. And if I wasn't able to find this program in St. Thomas and having the grant available for me, I don't know where I'd be at this time. And I want more African-American males to be able to pursue their dreams of becoming a teacher. And that's all I have to say.
I'm sorry, I think you did say I just wasn't able to hear you. I'm sorry.
Oh, yes. Thank you. Yes. Welcome to the committee, Lucky Omar. And please state your name for the record. Thank you.
Yes, Lucky Omar. Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members. My name is Lucky Omar, and I'm currently a student teacher in a fifth grade classroom, and I am in the Minnesota State University Mankato Teaching Program, and I am so grateful to have received the Minnesota Teacher Grant. The grant has been helpful in so many areas of my practice, and it's helped me obviously pay tuition. And it's also really reinforced my and solidified my own intentions as being a teacher, just to say, yes, this is my time. I need to be the teacher that I needed when I was younger and that so many students still need today. So this bill is absolutely crucial in my own beliefs. And I believe that it is my duty as a teacher candidate to be a force for all students, pushing them to think about their world in diverse ways. And you can't even imagine the smiles and, you know, the big eyes when I walk around the classroom because they finally get to see someone that represents who they are. And I think that everyone here knows the stats and the statistics that racial diversity benefits every single workplace, and teaching is absolutely no exception. So teachers of color, they provide more culture. They help to provide culturally relevant teaching and better understand situations that different students might be going to. And I had my first teacher of color when I was a freshman in college. So growing up in the community that I was in, not seeing anyone that looks like me, while also me wanting to be a teacher at that age, was very discouraging. And I believe that we need more teachers of color to help solidify that to students that, yes, we see you and you do belong here, which is what students absolutely need when they're in a school. They need to feel safe. And I think that school should be a safe place for all students all the time. And I believe that we need more teachers of color and groundbreakers in the world of education. I think that this bill will help lift the barrier that keeps so many amazing people from pursuing education. And Nelson Mandela said that education is the most powerful weapon in which you can use to change the world. And I believe that as educators, that we are responsible for infusing students with authentic and relevant knowledge that they can use to make this world a more accepting and loving place to be for all people all the time. Thank you for listening to me today. I appreciate the time.
Thank you. Next up is Greg Campbell. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name.
Thank you. Yeah, my name is Greg Campbell. I'm the principal at Barnum High School, Barnum, Minnesota. It's about halfway in between Hinckley and Duluth, right on I-35. I join you today in support of House File 1041 and the Increased Teacher of Colors Act. This bill will allow us to cultivate a more diverse pool of teacher candidates to choose from when we're filling vacancies at school statewide. It will allow our American Indian students and students of color who already struggle to see themselves in our curriculum and in our culture, see themselves in our teachers. And it will allow all students, regardless of race, color, or creed, to be exposed to and encouraged by teachers of diverse backgrounds, so that when they do leave our buildings, they do so with a better understanding of the world, empathy for others, and a set of priorities that reflect our shared humanity. As a high school principal, I know that how we set our budgets speaks volumes about our priorities as a school district. The same can be said of our state budget. If we underfund any of the provisions of this act, we are prioritizing the status quo, and that's simply not acceptable. The scholarship programs and student teacher grants contained in this bill will help us create lasting change. These provisions prioritize action. Fully funding both measures would help prospective teachers of color complete their licensure programs while incurring less debt, and would enable us to address some of our most severe license shortages while diversifying our faculty. Like other speakers have pointed out today, the proposed biennium investments of this bill, just to swing the pendulum of progress 1%, make up only 1% of the total projected higher ed package. And like I said before, how we set our budget speaks volumes about our priorities as Minnesotans. If positively impacting the landscape of our students is truly a priority that we share, we must fully fund the Increased Teachers of Color Act. Thank you for your time, and I thank you for the opportunity to share my thoughts with this committee today.
Thank you. Kristen Damer, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Kristen Damer, thank you, Madam Chair and committee.
My name is Kristen Damer. I'm the Executive Director of Human Resources and Operations for the Moorhead Area Public Schools. We're an outstate rural district that sits on the border of Minnesota and North Dakota with a student population of about 7,000. However, our demographics are quite diverse. We're about 70% Caucasian students, 30% student of color. But when we look at our faculty, we're 97.7% Caucasian and 2.3% students of color. If we look at straight numbers of our 600 teachers, we would have to have 165 teachers to be representative of what's needed to be representative of our student demographics. Why is this important? As the other speakers and Representative Keeler have mentioned, research shows having teachers of color can help students of color reach better outcomes. And for our white students who are exposed to greater diversity in their classrooms, they're able to address topics such as bias and racism and gain a deeper level of appreciation for our diverse community. When I look at recruitment, which I have primary responsibility for in the district, 93% of our applicants are Caucasian and 7% identify as an applicant of color. Despite recruitment strategies, expanding job searches, posting in order to reach larger, more diverse audiences, targeted recruitment, utilizing diverse teams in our community, advocating grow your own programs, hiring bias training. If we don't have the candidates in the pool, we can't bring up the representation needed to best support our students. All of the information and recruitment tools do not advance the work to hire a more diverse teacher pool if we do not have students of color in our universities training to be teachers. The concern continues to be that we're seeing a general decline in teacher candidates and a low number of diverse candidates as a whole. A brief review of the 2018-2019 numbers for our local university showed the following. Current candidates in teacher programs were 94% white and 6% students of color, and those who completed the program were 97% white and 3% teachers of color. So very similar to our recruitment numbers. School districts can't meet the needs of our students without appropriate representation. We cannot meet those needs without increasing students of color graduating from our teacher preparation programs. The scholarship, student teacher stipends, and loan forgiveness in House File 1041 could provide useful tools in recruiting teachers of color and addressing the importance of representation in our faculty. Thanks for your time.
Thank you very much. Is there any further testimony for House File 1041? Okay, now we have some members who have questions, and in order to save, have enough time for our last bill, we'll go until 4 o'clock. And so we have nearly a half hour, and we have 6 members who have questions. So we will have about up to 4 minutes for each member so we can make sure that each one of these members gets an opportunity to ask their question. And we will start with Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you to the testifiers. Very interesting stories for you to tell about your involvement in becoming a teacher or in your student teaching. So thank you very much for that. Madam Chair, do we know if there's a report on the dollars that were appropriated in the last biennium in regard to the, I think $750,000 each year was to support candidates belonging to a racial or ethnic group underrepresented in the teacher workforce? Do we have any reports on the results of that?
Mr. Spies.
Madam Chair, Representative Erickson, in your virtual packet, there is data from the Office of Higher Education that outlines the teacher candidate grant program and the awards given for that over the last 2 fiscal years that were provided to the Coalition to Increase Teachers of Color in American Indian Teachers.
Madam Chair, may I continue with Mr. Spies?
Yes, please.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Spies. I had noticed that, but it wasn't what I was looking for, but I'll dig in deeper. I presume, Mr. Spies, that you had something to do with writing this proposal. So I'm wondering, why is it so complicated? I mean, it's really difficult for me to work through this proposal, and I'm wondering, why did you make it so complicated?
Mr. Spies.
Madam Chair, Representative Erickson, thank you for that question. The complicated nature of this is to try to, the intention was not to be complicated, but the intention was to address the challenges that have occurred over the last 4 years with administration and to address the issues that have existed in terms of the shortage areas that receive grants. The licensure shortage areas are not the most severe ones that have received grants over the last 4 years. And we tried very hard with stakeholders, including the Office of Higher Ed and Pelsby, as well as others, higher ed institutions and others, to craft language with House Research and the Revisor's Office to make sure that we had language that would clarify for the Office of Higher Education administering the program how to award in a better way the most severe licensure shortage areas by economic development region. The other complicated nature of this is regarding the extra appropriations sought for focusing the money and appropriation on teachers of color and American Indian teacher candidates, and to make sure that the focus of this bill is targeted towards those teacher candidates.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, thank you, Mr. Spies, for that explanation, but that doesn't uncomplicate things. So my next question is, why did you create a special revenue account?
Mr. Spies.
Madam Chair, Representative Erickson, thank you for the question. We were advised to go for a special revenue account in order to make sure that the money that the legislature intended, such as was the case in 2019, to go towards teacher candidates of color and American Indian candidates, that money stays with teachers of color and American Indian teacher candidates in the future. One of the things that the Office of Higher Ed has done, even though the statute allows appropriations up to $7,500, given the limited appropriations that have existed that have exceeded or been less than the amounts requested from candidates, they've awarded up to only $5,000 rather than $7,500. And so when that happens, and they're trying to guess how many awards are going to need in fall and spring, sometimes the number of applicants don't meet at a $5,000 range. They don't meet the number of applicants that could have used the awards at a $7,500 range. And so to have that special revenue account is important to keep the money where it was intended by the legislature in passing the appropriations.
Thank you. Representative Erickson, we're gonna move on to the next question. And would you like me to add you to the list if we have time permits?
Definitely, thank you.
Thank you, Representative Erickson. Representative Heinzman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would agree with Representative Erickson. I think the bill is incredibly complicated, and that's part of the reason I'm gonna ask the questions I'm gonna ask, because it doesn't seem clear. And I have a couple of questions. Hopefully we can get to them all. But I am wondering, first of all, what financial need criteria will the commissioner use to develop eligibility? I don't know. It might be there and obvious to the bill author, but I couldn't locate it.
Mr. Spies? Representative Heitzman, who did you ask for?
I wasn't asking for anybody specifically, just someone who could answer the question.
Thank you. Who would like to answer that question? Mr. Spies?
Yes.
Okay, go ahead.
Madam Chair, Representative Heisman, the Office of Higher Ed has a standard definition for when they manage grants and scholarship programs for demonstrating financial need. And as administrators who do this, there aren't any special requirements for that other than the FAFSA and expected family contribution. And these are, again, last dollars. They're not first dollars or in terms of financial aid. So after all other financial aid is granted and it's determined.
Representative Heintzman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It doesn't sound like we have that definition available for today's hearing, so I'll move on to the next question. This is another one that just maybe it's there in the bill and clear to the bill author, but I'm missing it. So how do you affirm that an individual is a person of color or an American Indian? Just looking for the information, and I'm having a hard time locating it.
Mr. Spies?
Madam Chair, Representative Heintzman, every institution collects that data when students seek admission to that institution. And in addition to the records in the programs and at the institutions, the candidate can affirm their identity with the Office of Higher Education.
Madam Chair.
Representative Heintzman.
Is the bill author or Mr. Spies clear on what that is? What is that process? I'm just wondering, you know, as we're talking about how this bill works, it'd be nice to have that information, you know, as it's being debated and discussed here today.
Representative Keeler, Mr. Spies, who would, Representative Keeler?
Well, I'll just jump in quick and then I'll pass it back to Mr. Spies. I mean, I think anytime you fill out an application, Representative Heintzman, we know this, when like you send your kids to school, you identify your ethnicity. It's the same way that we're doing it in enrollment for higher education. And so we're taking the student information that's provided in their application to determine whether or not they identify as somebody from underrepresented population based on ethnicity. As you know, the only culture that actually has identifying opportunities is American Indian culture, and it's unfair to ask for us to have to provide tribal documentation and not take our word for it when we take everybody else's word when they identify as an ethnicity. So it's taking that information and moving it forward as far as how we identify our students. It's self-identification, just like we do for every other system when it comes to race and ethnicity.
Madam Chair.
Representative Heintzman, I will add you to the list if you would like to. We need to move on to Representative Neal.
Please.
Oh, I'll add you onto the list. Thank you.
Madam Chair, I would like to be able to respond to the bill author.
Okay. Well, we'll come back. We'll come back if your time permits. Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I want to say that I'm supportive of the concept. I think this is a great idea. I personally have 8 members of my family that are people of color, and I like the concept. Where I get tripped up is in the very complicated nature of the bill. And I was really hoping that OHE would be here, because OHE has to be the one to make these determinations. So I looked through a couple times and I didn't see anyone from OHE, but the way that these are distributed are really confusing, and it's certain percentages of this versus this, and it's just, the administration's got to be a little challenging, but I don't see them here. If they want to get on, if they're listening, that'd be great. If you just would like to tell us, are you comfortable with the administration of this? But short of that, I'm just wondering if our fiscal staff, our nonpartisan fiscal staff, could just kind of for the public, just explain what a special revenue account would do and how that's structured differently than we do. I mean, it's special because we don't do it very often. And maybe they could just explain kind of the function of what that does. I think it's really important for the underlying bill. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Mr. Savory.
Madam Chair and members, I guess I'll draw kind of two points on this. The vast majority of appropriations within the higher education omnibus bill our general fund appropriations that go directly to a commissioner. For example, a program within the Office of Higher Education would be appropriated directly to the commissioner with general fund dollars. In this instance, the language is authorizing that money be transferred to an account in the special revenue fund. So it's taking general fund dollars and then transferring that, we're putting it into an account in the special revenue fund for the commissioner and our program to access in the future.
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And if he could just specify whether or not that then cancels back to the general fund, or if that stays in the in that special revenue account ongoing and it just keeps filling up bigger, larger and larger.
Mr. Savory.
Madam Chair and members, unless there is language that the legislature were to adopt, the money would remain in that account, unlike the general fund, which would cancel back.
There we go. There's the answer. Thank you, Madam Chair. And then the last question I have, do I still have time, Madam Chair?
Yes, Representative O'Neill, you have another minute.
Thank you. I've been trying to be efficient. Then the last question I would have is, this is a very large increase. So, and I don't think anybody said that in the testimony, what the actual appropriation is. Let me just see here so I don't get it wrong. So it's 10.1 5 million in 2022 and 16.15 million in FY23. So that's a very, very large increase. I believe Representative Erickson had mentioned that it was 750,000 for one portion of this program in the past. So since that's such a large jump, and I'm just wondering if the author could explain and kind of justify, do the math for us. Why are we doing such a large appropriation, going from a small appropriation of, you know, around a million to 10 million? And
Representative Keeler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll defer to Mr. Spies on this.
Mr. Spies.
Madam Chair, Chair Representative O'Neill, thank you for the question. So the teacher candidate grants, double in fiscal 22 and not quite triple in fiscal 23 to address and support 1,045 teacher candidates. There's a great need out there. In terms of the aspiring Minnesota Educator of Color Scholarship Program, there currently isn't that scholarship program, and the $10 million and $16 million in the next two fiscal years would be to address the needs of 1,000 teachers of color, teacher candidates of color in fiscal 22 and 1,600 in fiscal 23. Currently, we have approximately 1,200 teacher candidates of color in our systems.
Thank you. Representative Albright.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And for the author of the bill, or for Mr. Spies, I note that the bill itself identifies one of the 10 most severe licensure shortage areas. Could someone tell me where they are?
Mr. Spies.
Madam Chair, Representative Albright, one of the documents in your virtual packets is data from 2019 that would that identifies the top 10 licensure shortage areas by economic development region, according to data provided by MDE and Pelsby. And if you look at that, you'll see how those top 10 licensure shortage areas vary by economic development region as the most severe for each region.
Representative Albright, do you have a follow-up question?
Yes, I do, Madam Chair, and this is on lines 2.27 and line 2.28 of the bill. What does it mean that award amounts are not governed by rulemaking for purposes of Chapter 14 or 14.386?
Mr. Spies.
Madam Chair, Representative Albright, you have stumped me on my memory for that. That was language that the House Research and Revisor's Office said should be in there, but I don't recall the exact reason.
Representative Albright, Chair, do you have a thought?
Well, Madam Chair, I think it's kind of important. Thank you, Madam Chair. I think that's fairly important because I'll read it to you. It says, if a statute provides that a rule is exempt from Chapter 14 and Section 14.386 does not apply to the rule has the force of law unless the context of the statute delegating the rulemaking authority makes clear that the rule does not have force of law. Is anyone on this Zoom call able to explain why that rule or that piece of statute might be necessary in this bill.
Madam Chair, I believe Nathan Hopkins.
I lost connection, Representative Albright. I lost connection. Did somebody ready to answer a question? Mr. Hopkins has his hand up. Mr. Hopkins?
Madam Chair and members, exempting the annual award amount from rulemaking would mean that the Office of Higher Education doesn't have to go through any formal notice and comment procedures or anything like that under the State's Administrative Procedure Act in order to set that amount each year. It can just do it. It can set the amount, and the amount has the force of law without having to go through the formal process.
Okay, thank you. We are now going to move on to Representative Knorr.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you to Representative Keller for bringing this bill forward and to the testifiers. Members, what is clear in this conversation is we do have a big challenge. The challenge that we're facing is a growing challenge of having enough teachers of colors in the schools. What is clear that the students are missing an important component of having somebody who looks like them. What is clear is we have failed to invest to ensure that we can close that gap. This is more about equity and ensuring that our students who look, like me and like Representative Keller and others have got access to teachers who understand them, who can relate to them, who can give them that opportunity to succeed. Members, this is about the investment for the future. When you look at the student body, I believe right now we have about 34% or 35% are students of color. And when you look at the teachers, it's about 4%. If that is correct, as we provide resources, we're just tinkering around the corner, not providing what is needed to diversify the teacher pool. You've heard from the administrators, they're asking for help so that we can support the students who need that help at this moment. I think we can close some of the gaps that we have seen. We can address some of the issues that the students are facing. This is a moment for us to step up. We can debate all time on some of the policy provisions, but having a dedicated account to provide a continuous funding is much needed. It's the right moment. This is the time that we can make that difference. I don't have a quick question for any of the testifiers, but we need to have that engagement. And we have to be clear, this is essential and much needed. So thank you so much, Madam Chair, for giving me the opportunity to comment on this bill.
Representative Clevarn.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was just thinking about the comments of Representative Knorr and how the demographics of Minnesota are shifting and how important it is. It's important today that we have teachers of color in the classroom for the well-being of our students. That's a statement of fact. We all know that. And as we are going down the road to our future Minnesota self, it is going to be even more important that we have teachers of color in the classroom. Now, that isn't the comment that I wanted to start with, but in hearing Representative Knorr, I just wanted to make sure that I also am addressing the fact that is before us and the importance of this investment, because it is important that teachers have the career path that they want, but it's more important that we, the adults in the room right now, are thinking about our children in the future, those who aren't even born yet. It's important for us to keep them in mind. The question that I raised my hand about was that I heard the students who have used this money talk about things that are really important. You know, their words about becoming teachers were about feeling safe and accepted and relevant. And the importance of having teachers that reflect their values and their skin tones. So I would like to ask the students who are still with us today if they could share a little bit about how they found out about the Teachers of Color candidate grants. And I'll start with that question, and then Madam Chair, I'll have one more after that. If there are students on the call who would like to address that, or teachers.
Okay, Representative Cleave-Varn, we have 2 minutes for your answers here. And so who would, I have-
I would be willing to share.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Price.
Tavara Price. So I found out from my university, it has been very, very challenging, especially in a pandemic. And I'm a mother and a wife, a student and a teacher. And so with that being said, my program offers a full year residency, which means that I cannot work. So I had to quit my full-time job, which means that my household went from having two incomes to just one. And so with finding out about emergency funds and different things of that nature, I found out about the teacher's grant and was told that I could apply for it. And so it was very, very helpful. And it came in a time where I had no medical insurance and a lot of different things, right, that we need to survive. And so that is how I found out about the grant. And that is also why it is so important that we that I had the opportunity to receive the grant. Thank you.
Thank you.
Representative Cleave-Varn.
Are there others on the call who would want to address that question?
Okay, let's see. Oh, okay.
Maybe the second part then they might want. So when thinking about the application process and getting involved with the grant program, I'm just wondering how your interactions were with the process itself. We heard Representative Erickson talk about it being complicated, and I'm just wondering if you found the process to be complicated or if it was pretty straightforward for your participation.
And which participant would like to answer that question?
I would also answer that.
Okay, go ahead.
It was very simple to apply, very simple. Can't even recall, it was not a long process. We were sent an application, kind of gave given the nature of the grant, repayment or whether or not to repay. It was very quick. I think it was almost like filling out a survey and that was it. And you waited for the process. So very simplified process, actually.
Okay. And then
okay, Representative Cleave-Varn, we have to, Representative Kosnick raised his hand after I did the division there. So I'll give him a minute to ask a question and then we will wrap up with this bill to move to the next bill. Representative Kosnick.
Well, thank you, Chair Bernardi and Representative Keeler for bringing this bill forward. I know that there's a lot of questions on the, how you would put the bill together, the complexity of the bill. I have supported this in the past and it's something that it's an issue that I've grown to appreciate a little bit more. And I was received in my office a study from the legislative auditor, the Collaborative Urban and Greater Minnesota Educators of Color grant program that I wasn't really aware of before this report came on there. I would wish I had more time to kind of go through it before today's hearing. I wonder if the testifier, or the authors, could comment on that program compared to the bill in front of us. But out of shortness of time here, I did want to just say that research, if I could read on, I'll just ask members to read page 11 on student outcomes for sake of time. But if they want to comment on this report or this program relative to or comparative to the bill in front of us, I would be curious to answer. Thank you.
Mr. Spies.
Madam Chair, Representative Kosnick, thank you for the question and thank you for your support of the Increased Teachers of Color Act in the past. The Collaborative Urban Greater Minnesota Educator of Color program is in our E12 bill, and we are seeking an additional appropriation for that as well. One of the major findings of the Office of Legislative Auditor report was that there was funding appropriated that only equaled 35% of the requested funds for the grant program. And that grant program has basically been held flat in terms of legislative funding since 2017 at around $1 million per year. So one of the biggest things in terms of outcomes that the report looked at was, is there an increase in the percentage of teachers of color in the state? That grant program was never intended to increase the percentage of teachers of color. It's never been funded to increase the percentage of teachers of color. And the comprehensive nature of the Increased Teacher of Color Act with that grant program, with the bill before you today, and the Grow Your Own programs and other programs in the E-12 bill are a collective bundle that are meant to increase the percentage in the state. Thank you.
And just a follow-up comment, Madam Chair.
Representative Kosnick.
Thank you. And I guess I would just like to mention that, you know, this bill is scalable in terms of dollars allocated and programs. And obviously when we put the bill together and match it out with the Senate, it will be very apparent how scalable the bill is. But I do want to just say that I think the issue is important, and I hope that people will dig into it a little bit more, especially if you have some apprehensions. And Madam Chair, with your indulgence, I just want to read a couple sentences that says, research suggests that a diverse teacher workforce can have a positive impact on all students' educational experiences. This is especially true for students of color. One of my biggest issues that I learned about coming to the legislature was the embarrassing wide achievement gap in our state and for a variety of reasons. And that's why I think we need to kind of keep an open mind a little bit about how we address and try to address and improve our state overall. And that is through making sure that all our students are achieving and especially those that we've historically failed, that we can help them achieve more through programs like this, and that is good for our entire state. And so I appreciate the bill in its intent. Thank you.
Well, members, we did get through every member to be able to ask some questions, and I really appreciate the thoughtful conversation. And we are going to wrap it up with Representative Keeler now, and I would, Mr. Spies seems to be available to us many times around here at the Capitol, and I would guess that he would answer further questions if members have them, as well as Representative Keeler. Representative Keeler, do you have any closing comments?
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. You know, it's a complicated bill because it's a complicated issue that's really creating an investment in our next generations. And so I appreciate all of you bringing up these technical pieces of the bill. I think it's important that I highlight them and look at them. If any of you are willing to follow up with me afterwards, I would really be open for that. But I think it's important that we understand that it's all of our children that we're trying to invest in, and just making sure that we really move to close these achievement gaps. You know, there's a lot of things that Minnesota is really well known for, and there's some things that we want to be on the top of the list with. Being on top of the list for our massive achievement gaps is not one of the areas that we want to be there. So we have to come together collectively. I know that a lot of you work in education or you have kids in education, and really the reality is we want all of our next generations to thrive equally and equitably. So I appreciate your engagement in this conversation, and again, would be willing to follow up as we learn how to make this a reality for our students. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Keeler. I will renew my motion that would you like to renew your motion, Representative Keeler?
I would, Madam Chair.
Representative Keeler removes her motion for House File 1041 be laid over for possible inclusion in the Higher Education Finance Omnibus Bill. The bill is laid over. Thank you. Thank you for being here today, to all of our testifiers and sharing their stories and helping us with this bill, and Representative Keeler. We are now moving on to Representative Wolgamott's bill, House File 1708. I will move House File 1708 to be laid over for possible inclusion. Representative Wolgamott, welcome back to the committee. We miss you here.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I miss it too. Always good to be back in higher ed, and there's always an next biennium. So thanks for having me back.
Right. And I hear that you have an author's amendment labeled A21. And I will move A21 amendment to be in the bill in the form that the author wants. Does everyone have the amendment? Representative Wolgamott, please tell us what your amendment does.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This amendment simply expands the scope of the bill to include students at private colleges and universities.
We have before us, okay, so now I'm with, is there any discussion about the amendment? Hearing, if people want to lower their hands, I'll make sure that if they're for the second round from last time or first round this time. Okay, I'm assuming Representative Erickson, did you have a question regarding this amendment?
No, Madam Chair.
Okay, thank you. Representative Heintzman, did you have a question about this amendment? Representative O'Neill, did you have a question about this amendment?
Yes, Madam Chair. Thank
okay,
you.
Thank you.
So as the language reads, it says nonprofit degree granting institutions. So we have some for-profit private institutions. And so I'm just wondering if the author could clarify what he means when he says private, because there's both profit and nonprofit.
Representative Wolgamott.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative O'Neill. I will defer to Allison Grebner from Minnesota's Private Colleges and Universities, who I worked with on this amendment.
Ms. Grebner, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Hi, thank you, Madam Chair and members. Allison Grebner, Director of Government Relations at the Private College Council. The way that the amendment is drafted, Representative O'Neill, was to include nonprofit degree granting institutions, and that's the terminology that the Office of Higher Education uses to describe, to differentiate between the for-profit degree granting institutions and the nonprofit. So our colleges expressed an interest in having the opportunity to pursue a designation, and so that's why I reached out to Representative Wolgamott.
Representative O'Neill?
Thank you, Madam Chair. So it makes a difference. I just wanted to make sure that our members knew that it was the nonprofit sector of private colleges, not all of them. Thank you.
Okay. Seeing no further discussion, those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed, the motion prevails, and the A21 amendment is adopted. We have before us House File 1708 as amended. Representative Wolgamott, please tell us about your bill.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair, and thank you, members. Students of Minnesota's colleges and universities are facing steep challenges in their quest to stay enrolled and complete their degrees. But many of these challenges come not from the classroom, but from basic needs insecurities related to hunger and housing. That's why I'm presenting this bill, the Hunger Free Campus Act, which will provide a way to help colleges reduce this barrier to student success by connecting students to existing resources, strengthening existing on-campus resources like food pantries, and raising awareness to help reduce the stigma of asking for help that is so often associated with hunger. Originally passed in 2019 for Minnesota's community technical colleges, the Hunger Free Campus Act has seen successes, which my testifiers will share, but it's clear that students need more support. I've heard a lot from the students that represent at St. Cloud State University about how important and paralyzing the issue of hunger can be. So by providing funding for the program and expanding it to Minnesota's universities, we can ensure that no matter where a student goes to college in Minnesota, that hunger is reduced and eliminated as a barrier to success, so that they can graduate, find a job and a career that they love, and hopefully never experience hunger again. And with that, Madam Chair, I'd like to turn over to the testifiers that I have today to provide further perspective and insight into this important piece of legislation.
Thank you, Representative Wolgamott. Okay, so we've been waiting for Priscilla Mayoa to begin her testimony. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name and organization. Thank you.
Chair Bernardi, Ranking Member O'Neill, members of committee, thank you for having me today. For the record, my name is Priscilla Mayoa, and I am president of LEADMN, the statewide student association representing Minnesota State's community and technical college students. I'm excited to be here today to testify before you, and thank you, Representative Wolgamott, for introducing this very important student-centered legislation. I know our student leaders are excited to see this initiative take another step towards helping Minnesota State college students. Basic needs insecurities are a growing obstacle to students' abilities to succeed in college, and food insecurity is one of the greatest amongst them. You know, I am a student currently at about four colleges, but I began my journey originally at North Hennepin Community College, and I was a frequent visitor to the food pantry. I live with about seven other members of my family, and even though we do have food, sometimes it wasn't enough, sometimes it wasn't the adequate food that I needed, sometimes it was restrictive of my diet, and I have no food insecurity firsthand because of that, because I had to reach out to other avenues to get food, and I would sometimes depend on the granola bars that they had, you know, in the food pantry, or the cup of noodles or something like that, to feed myself and sustain myself for a study session before a test. You know, to quote one of our former student leaders, there's a difference between choosing to eat ramen and only being able to afford ramen, right? Sometimes you can go out to a bespoke restaurant and eat ramen, and then you have cup noodles that you have to warm up in the microwave to eat. There's often a stigma attached to being hungry, and that asking for help is somehow inappropriate or shameful. In 2018, student leaders at LEADMN began coming forward to shed light on their experiences with food insecurity. And the more students shared, the more other students felt empowered to speak up. Students shared stories of choosing between groceries and textbooks, choosing between food for a few days and buying gas to get to campus. Students who could only eat one small meal a day if they were lucky. Students who relied on the free snacks, like myself, around campus as a food source. And student parents who struggled to afford food for their families. By sharing their stories, students placed a giant spotlight on a very major issue. Students at LEADMN pride ourselves in providing student-led policy solutions to the problems that students face. In 2019, in response to the major barriers being created by food insecurity for our students, LEADMN worked with state legislature to pass the Hunger-Free Campus Act for our community and technical colleges. As of today, I am proud to report that 16 colleges have so far received the Hunger-Free Campus designation, and we have a few more who are in the pipeline for approval this year. Along with pushing colleges to provide services to students that help address food insecurity, one of the other goals of the Hunger-Free Campus Act is to really highlight the work that colleges are doing in order to show students in their campus community that there is support available for them, and to help them overcome that stigma that's often associated with food insecurity. As part of that awareness, we hope to finally do public awarding ceremonies this fall for all the campuses who have achieved the Hunger-Free Campus designation. While the designation is pushing colleges to focus on food insecurity and to provide new resources to students, we know that more help is needed. From conversation we have had with campus staff and student leaders over the past 2 years who have worked to achieve Hunger-Free designation, nearly all of them have identified a strong need for funding to help support the work in a more robust way. Campuses need funding for things like purchase of a new freezer or refrigerator for perishable goods. You know, they want to renovate and expand the space for their food shelf so they can keep up with the demand and have enough space for privacy. They want to be able to sustain an emergency grant program or to extend outreach and connect with students with support to things like SNAP. In 2019, LEADMN provided financial support for our community and technical colleges to participate in the HOPE Center on Food and Housing Insecurity. Among the nearly 10,000 students who responded to the survey, they found that 39% had been food insecure in the past 30 days. 49 were housing insecure and 18 had been homeless in the past year. This survey only further illustrated the ongoing challenges that our students were telling us about firsthand and confirmed the need to increase support for students beyond what we had already been doing with the Hunger-Free Campus Act. The work of the Hunger-Free Campus Act for Minnesota community and technical colleges was just the starting point.
Roughly a quarter of our students will also transfer to university, and for those experiencing food insecurity, that barrier to the success would transfer with them as well. Making the expansion of the Hunger Free Campus Act incredibly important to ensuring that students have the support they need regardless of what college or university they choose to attend. By funding and expanding the Hunger Free Campus Act, you provide our future therapists, electricians, medical assistants, welders, cyber defense analysts, and nurses with the support they need to get through college and ensure that hunger no longer prevents students from completing their degree and graduating. Thank you, and that's my testimony.
Thank you very much. And we have two other testifiers who would like 2 minutes before our committee each. And we have with us Gabe Hafeman. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative Wolgamott, and esteemed representatives. My name is Gabe Hafeman. I'm a senior in the Political Science Department at the University of Minnesota Twin Cities, and I serve as a State Legislative Affairs Fellow for the Minnesota Student Association. I come to you today to address a problem both widespread and very close to my heart. Food insecurity affects conservatively 24% of Minnesota's 420,000 college students. That rate is nearly twice as high among students of color, first-generation students, and transgender students. That said, food insecurity is a misnomer. Like Priscilla said, it's hunger. It's inability to focus. It's still having to do coursework and work shifts. Short-term, food insecurity is linked to lower grades, and after graduation, lower wages. Long-term, even short bursts of food insecurity are linked to higher occurrences of nearly every major chronic illness, including heart disease, cancer, and diabetes. As prior testifiers have alluded, the average college student today doesn't look the same as they did 40, 20, or even 10 years ago. We skew older. More of us are community college students, 46% overall. Our student bodies are more racially, ethnically, and socioeconomically diverse. 40% of us are the first in our families to be seeking degrees. We're more working class, more likely to have lived through not one, but two major recessions in our youth, and more likely to work while in school. Most importantly, we're much less likely to have the family financial safety net upon which students have previously relied. In some respects, I'm highly representative of those changing demographics. I'm the youngest in a family that clung to the most modest rungs of the middle class. I'm transgender, I'm a non-traditional student, and at 25, I'm finally about to graduate with a bachelor's degree. Like many students, I attended college just after high school. My parents told me early and often that I'd be paying my own way through. It wasn't for their lack of trying. Tuition costs alone have grown at twice the rate of Minnesota's median income since the 1970s. 2 years in, I just couldn't afford it. I pulled loans for tuition, sure, but daily costs like rent and groceries were too high. Even while working, and even in a city and school much smaller than Minneapolis, I had to drop out. In this way, my experience more closely parallels that of many community college students, 43% of whom drop out for reasons of hunger and financial insecurity. For 3 years, I worked 80 and 90 hour weeks juggling 3 and 4 low-wage jobs before transferring to school here. Still, school fees devoured my marginal savings. If it weren't for the tireless support of university staff to provide access to resources like the Nutritious You Food Pantry, I would have had to drop out a second and likely final time. Food pantries serve as a stopgap measure, and they keep students like me, students from working families, in school. That retaining factor opens up worlds of career and financial opportunity. Since 2017, 12 other states have taken up the fight for students' health and economic opportunity.
Ms. Hafeman, I know we planned for 2 minutes, and I'm going to need to cut you off. And I'm so sorry for that, because I could listen to you forever here. But we have another testifier, and somebody else has just asked to testify as well. And so I want to make sure we have a couple minutes for them, and we do have a member question. So if you could hang on for the committee, that would be great. And we need to wrap up by take our vote on the bill by 4:30. So thank you so much for testifying today. We have David Thompson. If you could limit your testimony for 2 minutes, that would be appreciated. Thank you. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So just to speak a little bit more about some of the systemic nature of food insecurity in Minnesota, and trying to keep time in mind here. The two main types that we talk about with food insecurity, some of the things that have been mentioned so far are chronic, stemming from a lack of financial resources, as well as rising tuition costs. Financial aid decreases as well. So financial aid essentially has not kept pace with the rising costs.
The Pell Grant, which is traditionally for low-income students, for example, used to cover 80% of college costs. It's now less than 30. Students who are living on campus or near campus have to pay a premium for food, housing, access to other services, and students living farther from campus face added costs in the form of transportation, access barriers, trying to schedule. One of the things that was mentioned by other testifiers about students working, the Hope Center survey of Minnesota schools and food insecurity indicated that the vast majority of students are working, even though they are food insecure. I have it here. 79% of food insecure students surveyed were employed, and an additional 44% of those were working 20 or more hours a week. So it's not that these students aren't working, that they're not trying to make ends meet. It's simply that the costs that they're facing are too much. And in some cases, it's not chronic costs, but it's acute. It's one expense, a repair, a medical emergency, missing hours from work to care for a child or a loved one, because many students today have children of their own or families to take care of, be it brothers, sisters, parents. And these situations essentially short circuit their investment in their own education as well as the state's investment. Everything that's been invested in them to this point then goes by the wayside because they're forced to leave school and many don't return at that point. So it's certainly a pressing issue and something that with a little bit of help, we can get many, many more students across the finish line, contributing to the economy, becoming productive citizens and shining examples of Minnesota's educational system. So I encourage you all to support this legislation and to speak to students in your districts as well to learn more about their challenges. Thank you.
Thank you. And we added another testifier today and we have 2 minutes for you. And that is Caden Rinzel. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I'm excited to testify. So my name is Caden Rinzel. I'm a second year student at Hamline University, which is a nonprofit private university. I'm majoring in social justice. I'm also seeking a certificate of conflict studies and I'm minoring in sociology. I'm proud to say that I'm really involved in the food security and food advocacy work at Hamline. I'm an executive team member of Feed Your Brain, which is a student org that was founding our Food Resource Center originally. I'm also a student worker and past outreach intern for the Food Resource Center, as well as a Hamline fellow in a project through the National Institute for Food and Agriculture. In terms of what Hamline offers, there's a lot of student-led and student-based basic needs work. As I mentioned, Feed Your Brain is a student-led campus organization, and the Food Resource Center, which is what we call our food shelf on campus, was created due to student-led research. That research first done is going to echo a lot of previous testimony givers, but our research was done in 2017 for on-campus and off-campus students, and it showed that 48.5% of respondents were food insecure, basing it on USDA guidelines, and 70% of students were food insecure when including the Hope Lab questions, which is who we partnered for our research with. From this research, students from Feed Your Brain worked in collaboration with Hamline Student Congress to set up our food shelf, so we now offer free groceries to undergrad and graduate students. There are also other options for students to seek basic needs support, such as the Dean of Students Office, Emergency Fund, our Campus Food Access Steering Committee, and one-on-one SNAP benefit application support, which is offered through our current AmeriCorps Vista on campus. So to keep things short, there's a lot of exciting potential for future growth on campus, along with our current options for student involvement and student support. And I personally see Hamline, among other private nonprofit universities, as an ideal example of a private nonprofit being what I would consider a hunger-free campus if this designation becomes available. Thank you so much for this opportunity to testify.
Thank you. And I know if members are like me, we'd love to hear our students and our testifiers. So we really appreciate that. And I am just going to call if there are any other testifiers here today that wanted to testify. Otherwise, hearing none, we are going to move to Representative Erickson and Representative O'Neill. We have a couple minutes for each of your questions, and then we will move to our vote. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Wolgamott, how much do you think St. Cloud State University could receive if this were to become a part of our higher ed bill?
Representative Wolgamott.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Erickson. I don't have that exact number at this time. I know that they would be eligible for that. I guess I would defer to, I've got some folks from Lead Minnesota who might have further insight on that.
We may not have time for that. I can check that out. But Representative Wolgamott, would you be able to take advantage of secondhand harvest and, you know, what they allow? Because what I do is I, instead of giving products, I donate a lot of money to the food shelf, because then they can purchase the items through the secondhand harvest network and get much more product in the hands of the receiver, which could be St. Cloud State University, which, you know, both you and I are close to. So, I mean, that's just a comment I have. I just hope that if this proceeds, that we're being really smart about how we service our students based on what the provisions are in this Hunger-Free Campus designation. Thank you.
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have two quick questions. So it's a blank appropriation, and does the author of the bill have an idea of how much this new appropriation should be? And then secondly, is this something that is optional for our university to opt in, or, and is this something, if it is opt-in, is it something that you eventually are moving towards mandating to Penn State and University of Minnesota and now apparently nonprofit colleges?
Representative Wolgamott.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You know, it's a scalable program. My understanding, this is heard over in the Senate. I think that, you know, we're still waiting to get a fiscal on this. We're just laying it over in the Senate. I know that they had put out the number of 200,000, but I would defer to Matt from Lead Minnesota if he has any further insights on that.
Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record, Matt Gutch. Sorry.
Thank you, Chair Bernardi and Representative O'Neill. For the record, my name is Matt Gutch, and I'm the Director of Government Relations at LEAD-MN. And just got to say, Representative O'Neill, it was a great parade in Maple Lake this weekend, and saw you there. But yes, so in the Senate, when the bill was heard, the appropriation was for $100,000 per year. So $200,000 over the biennium, and that did not include the private for-profit institutions. So that, you know, amount could potentially grow then with those institutions being added in. And then could you repeat your second question? Sorry.
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I think this is optional at this point, where they can opt in and they can apply to be, you know, a hunger-free campus.
Yes.
Is this something that the author of the bill, it's actually a question for the author, is this something the author of the bill is actually looking toward eventually doing this as a mandate to all of the campuses?
I guess I haven't thought that far ahead. I'm just trying to get this bill passed right now, get this bill laid over for future consideration. But if that's something you want to work on, Representative O'Neill, if you have a bill for that, be more than willing to talk to you, I guess.
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm just trying to understand what we're working on today. And then the last question I have is, it seems like most of the campuses, especially the four-year campuses, would have cafeterias and everything like that. I don't know a four-year campus that has dormitories and everything on site where they don't have a cafeteria. And so I'm wondering, how does this work on a campus that already has a full cafeteria? And couldn't the campus just, you know, help? I mean, a lot of times you can either work or get room and board paid for through different scholarships and grants and so on and so on. So I'm just wondering, how does this work on the four-year?
Representative Wolgamott, if you could answer that in about 20 seconds, that would be good, because I needed you to go to your closing remarks.
I'll,
so we can house information.
I'll defer to my testifier, Mr. Gooch from LEAD-MN.
Mr. Gooch.
Thank you, Chair Bernardi, and thank you, Representative O'Neill. I will actually defer to David Thompson from St. Cloud State, who can talk about that, I think, a little bit more.
And Mr. Thompson, welcome to the committee. You have 20 seconds to respond to that, because we are going to a vote.
Okay, so essentially, while they do have cafeterias and dining plans, often those plans represent an excessive cost to the student that then eats up a significant portion of their aid, but does not always cover their meals. For example, some of the cheaper plans only cover, say, 11 meals a week, something like that. So students who have meal plans, research has shown consistently that they still experience food insecurity because of the other cost burdens associated with transportation, in many cases, childcare. Even with, you know, being dormitories or food bank or meal plans on campus, they may not necessarily be living on campus if they're not traditional students who are some of the most strongly hit by food insecurity. So that's kind of the quick answer, but I can certainly follow up with more detail.
Thank you. And Representative Wolgamott, and I realize we're going to be laying it over. We're not going to verbal, but could you just wrap up your testimony today and we will wrap up for the day.
Madam Chair and members, let's make sure that students at Minnesota's colleges and universities can focus on their studies rather than on their stomachs. Let's make sure that no student in Minnesota is denied the opportunity for a college degree because of costs and needs of hunger. Thank you so much for considering this bill, for laying it over, and I urge your inclusion of it in your omnibus bill. Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, members. Thank you, testifiers, especially the students. Thanks for sharing your perspectives today.
And thank you for all the testifiers today for sharing your stories, Representative Wolgamott and members. I will renew my motion that House File 1708, as amended, be laid over for possible inclusion in the Higher Education Finance Omnibus Bill. The bill is laid over. The meeting is adjourned.